Great, thank you. The following statement is from Dr. Bob's Nightmare on page 181. If you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride, which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think you are strong enough to beat the game alone, that is your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking liquor for good and all, and sincerely feel that you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you. It never fails if you go about it with one half the zeal you have been in the habit of showing when you were getting another drink. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. We are guests of this facility. There's no smoking anywhere in the building or outside the main doors. Please put trash in its proper place. And at this time, if you have a cell phone, please turn it off or put it on vibrate. If you would like to become a member of this group, please see me or any group member after the meeting, and we'll add you to our list. Will all group members please raise your hand? We respectfully request you limit your sharing so we may all have a chance to share. Do not confuse this meeting with the discussion meeting. The group conscience is as such. Opinion without experience helps no one. Please refrain from any cross-talking or private conversations during the meeting. If you need a big book, you can borrow one from the table by the door. As Bill Wilson states, sobriety, freedom from alcohol, through the teaching and the practice of the 12 steps, is the sole purpose of an AA group and is the purpose of this group. Out of respect for our speaker, can you please try to remain seated until he's finished? Thank you. This meeting does close with the third set prayer as done by our co-founders on our knees, if anybody cares to join. And at this time, I'm going to turn the meeting over to tonight's leader, Chris S.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Chris, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
it's really good to be here tonight. It's a privilege and a pleasure to speak at any AA meeting. I can say that back in the 1980s, there weren't a lot of people lining up to ask me to speak somewhere. You know, there was a lot of people saying, "Would you just shut up? And would you just go somewhere else?" So to be at a place in my life where someone actually will pay attention and ask me to speak somewhere is really a privilege. Alcoholism. Alcoholism is quite possibly the most misunderstood illness on the planet. Unfortunately, most professionals that treat us for alcoholism don't really understand what it is, and because of that, don't really understand how to treat us. When you wander into certain AA meetings, there can be meetings that you show up at where the majority of the people in the meeting don't understand alcoholism. A lot of them will think that alcoholism is drinking too much. And if you don't understand alcoholism, it's very, very hard to embrace a solution to it. I was at a third step meeting on Wednesday, and you know, there was different sharing, and one of the things that kind of caught me was I'm thinking back about my own experience wandering through the doors of AA. What happened in my particular case was alcoholism really had got my attention. I had been drinking just, well, here's a typical day in my life in the last half of the 80s. I would come to in the clothes that I passed out in the night before. Most of the time I would hit the floor, just I'd pass right out in a chair, land on the floor, you know, somewhere in the middle of the night, struggle into bed. And then I'd come to in the morning with the alarm clock going off. I'd have to be at work at 8 o'clock. It'd be about 7:30. I'd wander into the bathroom and do my vomiting calisthenics. That was my exercise for the day. I would throw some water on my face, and I would struggle out to the car. And I hadn't had a drink since about 8 o'clock the night before, but if you would have pulled me over and breathalyzed me, I'd had a .48 or something. I mean, the vodka or the bourbon was just coming through my pores. I always stunk like a bar rag. And I would I'd drive to work, and I would have those. They aren't even hangovers. When you're an alcoholic, they're not even hangovers. What they are is it's alcohol poisoning is really what it is. You have poisoned your body so much with alcohol that you are ill in on every kind of level. And I would just be shattered, and I'd be driving to work, and I would be swearing to God, I'm never going to do this again. As a matter of fact, tonight is the night that I am not going to drink tonight. I can't go on this way. I can't feel this bad every single morning. This is way too much for me. And if there were to be a polygraph guy with a lie detector test, and they hooked it up to me at that particular moment, and they asked me, Chris, are you ever going to drink again? I would say, no, tonight I am quitting. And I would be telling the truth. The lie detector would say, he is telling the truth, because I was. I mean, you know, when you're feeling that bad, you just don't want to feel that bad anymore. Well, somewhere around noon, I'd get half a sandwich down. I'd rehydrate with like a half a gallon of some kind of liquid. And I would start, like quitting time is coming, you know, it's like 2 or 3 o'clock. And I'm thinking, you know that decision I made this morning about, quitting? You know, that's a pretty strong decision. That might have to be modified a little bit. As a matter of fact, on the way home tonight, I'm going to modify it by stopping at the liquor store. And on the way home from work, I would stop at the liquor store. I would buy my quart of vodka or quart of bourbon, and God help somebody in line in front of me asking about what kind of wine goes with fish or something. You know, get out of my way! I gotta buy this vodka! And just having it in my hand while I'm on the way out to the car, I would start to feel a little bit better. I'd get home and I had these big like 24-hour iced tea glasses or whatever, and I'd put some ice in there, and I'd pour like half of the quart in there. If it was vodka, a little bit of orange juice. If it was bourbon, a little bit of Coke. And I would start drinking. So I'd be drinking by 4:30, 5 o'clock. Within an hour, I'm tongue-chewing, knee-walking, not able to operate my own pants, zipper drunk. By 7 or 8 o'clock, I'm in a stupor blackout, just drooling and calling people on the phone, all that pathetic stuff. And then I would pass out. And then the same thing would happen the next day. So that caught my attention. So I decided, I've heard about this treatment center. I was forced to go to outpatient to get my license back for a third DUI. So I knew that there was this treatment center not far from me. And upstairs was the place that they treated the people who couldn't stop drinking. That's about all I knew. So I put myself through the 28-day treatment program. I still didn't understand alcoholism. They showed me the movies and, the Chalk Talk movies and this, that. I still had no clue what the hell was going on with me. I really didn't. I got out of the 28-day program, I made it a month or two, and I started drinking again. Now, much to my boss's chagrin, who paid $13,000 for me to go to this place, and I was serious about quitting drinking. I knew it was killing me, and I knew I needed a little extra help. The treatment didn't offer me the help. I don't know what it offered me. It offered me group. Anybody in here ever been in group? Where you sit in a big circle and you talk about your day and people call you on your bullshit. Whoever thought that is a treatment for alcoholism is out of their mind. That just gives you more resentments, group. I'd be really pissed off because somebody's hogging the group. They're talking and talking and talking. 20 minutes, 35 minutes, talking, talking. I'm thinking, will you shut up? Will you just shut up? Why don't you go drink? I was so mad at this person because I want to share. Typical crazed, self-centered alcoholic. So anyway, I get out of this treatment center and I'm going to some outpatient. I'm going to some AA because they suggest AA. And I'm coming in and I'm not understanding what's going on. I'm going to closed-minded discussion meetings where people have been sober for years and they're talking about their boss and they're talking about their divorce. And they're talking about their family and they're talking about all the stuff I could care less about. And I'm wondering, what does this have to do with drinking? I didn't get it. And so because I didn't get it, I didn't plug into it. The steps are always on the wall in these meetings, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be a topic of discussion. The topic of discussion can be anything, especially in these meetings that I was going to in 89. Now, I got to tell you though, out of any meeting I went to, I was the person who didn't want to drink most. I guarantee you, I didn't want to drink most. And on the way to an AA meeting one time, the thought crossed my mind that it would be a good idea to buy a gallon of vodka and drink it, because it would make me feel so bad that I would remember why I don't drink. So I bought a gallon of vodka and drank it to improve my sobriety. What a mess that was. I was back out for about 7 months drinking, and I came back into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't sign myself back into treatment. At least I thought that there was some kind of glimmer of hope in AA. I mean, you can't deny the fact that one person after another announces themselves as an alcoholic, and then you hear how long they've been sober. You can't deny it. Not every one of them can be lying. So I started to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was talking earlier about misunderstanding alcoholism. Across the board, there's a misunderstanding about alcoholism. Alcohol is not the problem with an alcoholic. Alcohol is the solution for an alcoholic. It just turns on you after a number of years. I thank God for alcohol the first 5 years I was drinking it, because it got me out of the house. It got me to be able to ask girls out. It got me to be able to speak, you know, in a crowd. There's a million things. Alcohol let me dance. There was dancing lessons in whiskey. You know, I needed that, and I thank God for it. But the true solution, the true problem is this: why did I need to drink? Why did I need to drink? That's really the problem. That's a spiritual problem. Now, and that's across the board misunderstood. People think that the solution for an alcoholic is sobriety. If you're a sober alcoholic, and that's all you are, you're sober, there's no recovery program, there's no behavioral modifications, you're not trying to change, you're not practicing any recovery principles. If you are an alcoholic, a couple of things will happen to you. You will go insane, you will take your own life, or you'll start drinking again. One of those three things is going to happen if you're really alcoholic. A heavy drinker can go to AA meetings for 100 years and not do anything. But an alcoholic will go insane and take their life, drink, they just won't be able to make it. You slowly crumble inside. The world closes in on you and you cannot take it anymore. Sobriety becomes untenable. Now that is a real difficult concept to explain to people, because they see our drinking behavior and they think that's the problem. That behavior, you get really drunk and you get DUIs and you're nasty to people and you do stupid, tragic, crazy things, and they see that behavior as the problem. The problem is, why do you need to drink? What obsession do you have to continue to put this? We're not stupid. We know that if we pick up a drink, anything can happen. We're not stupid. We've got experience with that. Yet we continue to pick up the drink as alcoholics. And if we get those periods of sobriety, which most of us get, you know, some of us can stay sober pretty long periods of time. Until it's just too much for us. But if we get those sober periods of time, we are at best cranky, at worst psychopathic. Now, this is a really difficult concept to explain to people. If you go to psychiatrists or if you go to counselors, they're going to look at your behavior, and your behavior is going to be patterned on a psychiatric disorder. It's going to be patterned on depression. Manic depression, usually they'll catch us with, or anxiety, an anxiety disorder, or antisocial personality disorder. I mean, this is what we're going to be diagnosed with, because it's what we're showing up like. It's how we're presenting. But it's a deeper problem with the alcoholic. It's a deeper problem. We're spiritually tangled, which leads to emotional disorders all over the map, which leads to we have to take a vacation from ourselves, damn it, and alcohol can take us at least briefly away from the pain of being in our own skin. And that's basically what happens with alcoholics. Now, the only known solution to this is abstinence with a transformational personality change. That is really the only healthy treatment for an alcoholic. It's not healthy for us not to be drinking. It's better than if we're drinking, but it's not healthy for an alcoholic just not to be drinking. The alcoholic is 60 times more likely to take their own life than the non-alcoholic. Remember that when you're going for your life insurance policy, you know, if you need to get life insurance and you check that box, are you alcoholic? Check, you know, all of a sudden your life insurance is going to be $4 million a month because they know there's a huge chance you're going to take your own life. In a stage of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization that it talks about in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, they found, in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, they found that certain religious, spiritual practices, the people who adhered to those, who actually did that, had a larger likelihood of being able to stay sober and to get more comfortable with their sobriety. This is the great news that the book Alcoholics Anonymous shares with us. That we not only can be sober, but we can be absolutely happy about it and not be suicidal or psychotic. Where they learned these lessons were in some of the earlier religious groups, like the Oxford Group, the Emanuel Movement, the Jacobi Club, even the Washingtonian Organization. They learned that by practicing certain spiritual principles in our lives, we would seemingly recover from this hopeless state of mind and body that everyone knows chronic alcoholism is. So, one of the great things that they did is they put the book Alcoholics Anonymous together. Now, I've worked around some really, really seriously intelligent and experienced treatment professionals over the past 5 years. I've met an incredible wealth of people that run rehabs, people that I'm good friends with the president of the National Council on Alcoholism. I mean, I could go on and on and on. I know so many of these professionals. And it's very, very difficult for them to deal with us. It's very, very difficult for them to put some type of treatment process together that's actually going to work. It's difficult because of the boundaries that you have to work in with reimbursement agencies, you know. But each and every one of them that I've met, I believe in their heart, want to help as much as possible. And some of these professionals get it, and they highly recommend 12-step fellowships and sponsors and all those things. And some of them don't. They see our disorder as a mental behavioral disorder, psychiatric disorder. Now, so there's a huge amount of misunderstanding. I think if you've experienced recovery from alcoholism, you not only understand the problem, you understand the solution. In this book, it basically gives us a lot of information in the first chapter on what alcoholism looks like. To sum it up in one sentence, this is a description of a basic alcoholic. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot give up drinking entirely, or if when drinking you have little or no control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. Now, giving up drinking entirely. Remember I said that we don't do real well with sobriety? That's a symptom of alcoholism. We don't do real well with sobriety. We make a lot of promises. We make a lot of decisions, and we swear off, and we get on the water wagon and everything. But for some reason, alcohol goes back in our body. That's a symptom. Second symptom is if when drinking, you have little or no control over the amount you take. How many times have we stopped at a bar, but we're really going to go home for dinner, and we close that bar down? I mean, that's just one example. How many times have you promised yourself you weren't going to get drunk at the company picnic? You know, I remember I did that. I promised I wouldn't get drunk. I made such an ass of myself. You have no idea. I want to do a blackout at the company picnic. You know, pushing people in the pool, breaking car windows. Oh, that went over real well. You know, that's a real check against your performance evaluation. You know. So anyway, but the other thing that is always present within the alcoholic is there's a dash in the first step, that our lives had become unmanageable. What that is yes, we have external unmanageability. Yes, we get the DUIs and we get thrown out of the house. We're horses' asses across the board. Yeah. But what we have more in common with is the internal unmanageability, which is more emotional and spiritual. At best, we're restless, irritable, and discontented. At worst, we suffer from pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. That's the scale that we're never serene. I can always tell the guy who's right on my ass tailgating me that he's an alcoholic. I can always tell that. I can always tell the person that's in line, you know, and it's really, you know, really impatient, you know, and counting the number of items you have in the 12-item line. I can always tell that that's an untreated alcoholic, because that's just the way we are. We're wound up like a garage door spring. Now, when they figured out that these steps would work, it basically looks like this. We admit that we're alcoholic and that we cannot manage our own lives. You have to start there. If you could have managed your life, you wouldn't be such a dick. You know what I mean? I mean, think about it. I mean, are we really putting together the type of quality of life we really want? No, because we've got an idiot as a manager. And that manager has to be fired. My personal experience was I went up to a guy named Fish Food Phil in my Monday night closed-minded discussion meeting. And I said, Phil, I've been in hell. I need to get out. Will you help me? And like most experienced sponsors, he laughed at me. I could use another pigeon. And thus started this sponsor-sponsee relationship. That was an act of surrender to me. You have to understand, I don't take advice from anybody. I don't want anybody telling me what to do. I don't want a taskmaster. I hate bosses. I don't like authority. I didn't like cops. I mean, you know, that's just my personality. Don't be telling me what to do. So to actually go to somebody and tell them, look, I'm putting myself under your care and direction. You know, tell me what to do, and I'm hurting bad enough to do it. That was an act of surrender for me. In step two, come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. That basically was I started by believing that Alcoholics Anonymous had a solution, maybe even for me. I mean, that's about where I started. Today, step two is much broader and wider for me. But in the beginning, it was just having a little sliver of hope. That, look, I'm going to die if I keep drinking this way. You know, maybe I'll survive if I go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was my step two in the beginning. Step three, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him. My decision was to turn my will and my life over to the care of Fish Food Phil. And allow him the spiritual consent to tell me what to do. And to call me on my stuff. Never before would I put up with anybody criticizing me. I basically asked this guy to do that. That was a pretty serious decision for me. Today, of course, God plays that role, turning my will and my life over to the care of God. It's much bigger now. It's much safer because Fish Food Phil moved away, you know. So turning my will and my life over to the care of God with the following steps. was what those steps look like to me today. But my first experience was basically saying I was going to go to a meeting every night and getting a sponsor. Now, in step four, making a fearless and moral inventory, what I did was I became willing to look at my faults. I became willing to look at where I have fallen short. What are some of the things that I have done that has interfered with me being able to manage my life and being able to have some kind of a quality of life? And I've probably done 12 four steps, and tonight is on step 10. I'll be on that in a minute. I do that religiously, and it's become a discipline. A self-examined life isn't worth living. You know, some very wise person said that, and I believe that. I believe that by recognizing the problems, you actually have a chance of avoiding them in the future. So that has worked for me over the past couple of decades, and I rarely shoot myself in the foot anymore. I rarely do, but it's taken a long time. Anyway, in step five, sharing this inventory, sharing my character defects with God, myself, and another person. My first one was with Fish Food Phil. I've done many since, and basically that's where I get brutally honest. I get brutally honest about my shortcomings. I put it all on the table. This is how petty and how childish and how selfish I've been. And I find someone that I can trust and someone who understands what I'm doing, and I share this stuff with them. There's six warnings in the big book that if you don't do a fifth step or you hold anything back on your fifth step, you'll get drunk again. So if you've done fifth steps and hold things back, I would question, whether you're an alcoholic of the type the big book talks about. Most of the people in AA are not. This book talks about the low-bottom, chronic alcoholic. And a lot of people are coming into AA today before they've reached those levels. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But if you're in real trouble from alcoholism, you need to know you cannot hold anything back in this, or you will be drunk again. It's an absolute given. They tell you six times that that's a truth from their own experience. So I became brutally honest with Phil, and I told him stuff I had never told anybody else. And that was the first time I think I was ever honest with anybody about, my real character. And you move into step six and step seven. Became willing to have God remove these character defects and humbly ask God to remove these shortcomings. Having identified what my problems are, my stock in trade, the inventory items that need to be removed, the things that are blocking me off from a quality of life and being comfortable with my sobriety, and if you're uncomfortable with your sobriety, that's why you drink. Having identified them, of course, I'm somewhat willing to have those defects of character removed. In step seven, I humbly ask God to remove those defects of character. If I'm going to hold anything back, things like lust, a lot of times we're going to hang on to that, or sometimes it has to do with our work environment. I can't be honest, I'm in sales. I mean, there's some things that we're not ready to let go of. The instruction is to pray for the willingness. I did that. The eighth step is become willing to make direct amends for where I've caused harm. I put a list together. In step nine, it says make direct amends, and I believe that this is what puts muscle in our program. This is what puts muscle in our recovery. Unfinished amends are corrosive. If we have amends that we really know that we need to make and we don't make them, that has the ability to corrode one's spiritual condition. With a corroded spiritual condition, we're susceptible to putting alcohol back in our body because we're not comfortable with our own sobriety. In my first shot through, I still left some unfinished amends. Half the reason really was because they didn't all come to me the first time I did an eight-step list, but there were a few in there I just was not willing to do. My next run through the steps, I actually completed every single amends that was on my list. And I can tell you from experience, the difference between having unfinished amends and the difference between not having unfinished amends is the difference between night and day. And that will absolutely open up step 10, 11, and 12 to you. Once you've gotten to a point where you do not have any unfinished amends left in your life, step 10, 11, and 12 will really, really come alive to you. That's my experience, and it's the experience of a lot of people that I've worked with, and a lot of my friends and mentors. That's our experience. I'm going to start reading a little bit on step 10, because this is tonight on step 10. But talking about step 10, you really have to talk about the recovery process, because step 10 is basically the step that teaches us how to be reactive using the tools that we've learned in the previous 9 steps. And then it pushes it out into the future a little bit and asks us to use step 11 and 12 on a daily basis also. So really what it is it's how to put this program in action in a reactive, day-to-day way. So it's a very, very important step. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we can't continue to take personal inventory. We can't continue to take personal inventory if we haven't done a 4-step. And continue to set right any mistakes as we go along. And we can't continue to do that if we haven't done our 9-step. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. A great topic for a meeting is, let's talk about entering the world of the spirit and what it means to you. Throw that topic out at the next discussion meeting you go to. It's fun. You're going to get a bunch of blank stares, or they're going to turn it into a resentment meeting really quick. What it means to me is the realm of the spirit for me is a realm of intuition. It's a realm of being connected to a power greater than myself and feeling that power actually flowing and working through me. That's what the world of the spirit is. I can do things which I never could have done on my own unaided power. I have a sense of peace and comfort in my life. And I also use that intuition that it's a God-given. Intuition is basically to know without conscious thought what to do next. And when you have that intuition working on all 8 cylinders, you rarely shoot yourself in the foot anymore. You usually make pretty good decisions. You usually behave in a way that doesn't create a lot of turbulence in your life. And things start to go your way. That's been my experience. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. You know, the whole point of the 12 steps is to prepare us to do the work of the 12th step. The work of the 12th step is to carry this message to the still sick and suffering alcoholic. What is this message? It's this message is the transformational experience that you too can undergo by taking the 12 steps. That's what this message is. So to be able to carry this message, you actually have to have experienced it. So the whole first 11 steps are preparing you to be a good sponsor, to be someone who can go out and carry a message of depth and weight to the still sick and suffering alcoholic. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Listen, I'm personally committed to this way of life for the rest of my life. I don't think that a certain amount of time will go by and I'll be able to just, you know, leave AA and go back and start living my life. I am under no delusions, because whenever I've backed away from this spiritual process, there's been repercussions. They've been emotional. They've been behavioral. Things start to go wrong in my life. I know that I have to be committed to this way of life the rest of my life. We read a little bit out of Dr. Bob's, quit drinking for good and for all. Now, if you've come here to quit drinking for good and for all, you have to apply the solution to alcoholism for good and for all. You just do. That doesn't necessarily mean go to 12 meetings a day the rest of your life. It means practice a recovery program, live a sober life, live a spiritual life. If you do that, you can remain abstinent and in a good space in that abstinence. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. This is automatic for me. These are things that I watch for because I don't like them. The longer I'm sober, the more pain I feel when I fear, when I experience these things. They're uncomfortable to me anymore. I don't want to be acting selfishly or dishonestly. It backfires on me. I don't want to have resentment because having a resentment is like drinking poison and expecting somebody else to die. And it's handing over my emotional state of mind to someone else. I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be resentful toward anybody anymore. And certainly fear. Fear blocks me off from the right next move. When fear is operating in my life, I dodge, I avoid, I go around. When to go straight through is the best way to go. That'll bring the best outcome. When I have fear, it's making me dodge and weave. And that just creates a whole nother series of problems for me. When these four things crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Some of the guys that I work with have an immediately. You know what an immediately is? Someone who's given spiritual consent that they can be called at any period of time to have these things shared with them. And if you have an immediately, you can call somebody up and say, "Hey, I'm selfish. This just really showed up. And I was dishonest. I lied to my boss. I'm really worried about this restructuring of the company." Whatever you need to talk about, you discuss them with somebody. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance is our code. Helping someone else who suffers more than you of alcoholism is the main purpose of your life if you're in a recovery program. It is the number one thing in your life. If you don't have sponsees or you don't have service commitments or you don't hang out and try to help someone who suffers a little bit more than you, you're missing the whole point of the 12 steps. The 12 steps are about preparing you to be of maximum service to those about you. To develop a service ethic, a spirit of compassion. And I don't even think this has to stay with alcoholics. A lot of the people I really respect a lot do, there's a really good friend of mine down in Pensacola who took a job running a homeless shelter. That's where he was drawn. One of my favorite sponsees of all time is now in charge of the soup kitchen in Morristown. When you do this work and you apply this on a day-to-day basis, you develop that compassion, you develop that service ethic. That's what this whole thing is about. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of our troubles. That is what alcoholism is. Alcoholism has a lot more to do with selfishness and self-centeredness than it does drinking alcohol. I'll tell you right now. Because you can stop drinking alcohol and you can still be suffering from untreated alcoholism. And that's that selfishness, that self-centeredness, that being self-absorbed. Everything is about you. How is this going to affect me is the first thing you think about. So that guy died, Harry died? He died on me. Now I got to dress up and go to the funeral. We make somebody dying about us, as alcoholics. It's all about, so this service ethic, this spirit of compassion is the antidote to alcoholism. That's what these guys discovered in the early days. It's the genius about this book. That's why there's 275 12-step fellowships out there that use these same steps. They're for overeating, for Cocaine Anonymous. There's Anonymouses for every. There's Gamers Anonymous now for the people who sit there over 24 hours doing Xbox. Any obsessive compulsive disorder known to man can be treated with these 12 steps. And, there's Tower Snipers Anonymous, you do enough step work and you don't have to climb that tower, and lock and load. They've seen the power in these steps. Here are some promises. We've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. If you're recovered, you're not fighting alcohol. You're not worried about going into the liquor store to buy a lottery ticket. You're not worried about going to the Christmas party because they're serving wine. The problem, you're not fighting it anymore. It says here, for by this time sanity will have returned. We seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it. It's from a hot flame. Somebody hands me a glass of whiskey or something, you know, it's like a poisonous snake to me. No thanks. Last time I drank that, I tried to kill my family. I'll pass. You know? We react sanely and normally. We will find that this has happened automatically. These are wonderful promises. These are the recovery promises. Everybody reads the ninth step promises, you know. And I like the ninth step promises, but these are the recovery promises. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. You can't fight alcohol head on. You can't fight alcoholism head on. What you do is you go around the back and you work a spiritual program, and then the problem gets removed. Many of us believe the problem is removed by God. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. So we are safe and protected when we're working this program. We're safe and we're protected. I've gone into some really bad areas and bad situations on 12-step calls. And, you know, if you're worried about doing that because you might pick up, you know, you haven't recovered. You know, you haven't done enough. There's work yet for you to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We're not cocky, nor are we afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And step 10 is the step that's most applicable to keeping in a fit spiritual condition. You apply step 10 on a daily basis, in all of its implications, and you will stay in a fit spiritual condition. A fit spiritual condition is the recovery from alcoholism. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. I can't tell you how many people I know that came into AA, did a half measured attempt on the steps, you know, and slow. Listen, if you don't do a full-blooded attempt on the steps, here's what happens. If you don't put enough into AA, you're not going to get enough back from AA to stay. We have a recidivism level that's absolutely insane. And I want to talk about that for a minute. I got in an argument with a professional who doesn't refer anybody to AA anymore because we've got a 6% recovery rate, and he could get that by administering placebos. That's his argument. This treatment professional, if you can imagine how stupid that is. And here's the argument I had with them. I ask them this question. I go, well, listen, let's say you've got a treatment for diabetes or you've got a treatment for cancer. And everybody that comes to you for treatment sits in the waiting room and never undergoes the treatment process. Would you be held accountable to those outcomes of everybody that walked through the door? He goes, no, I would only count outcomes of people who took the operation. I go, well, why are you holding us to outcomes for everybody that goes through the door? Rarely have we seen a person who has thoroughly followed the path. The path is the steps. If they haven't gone through the steps, I don't expect them to stay sober. They're sitting in the waiting room. You know, why would you hold us to a 6% recovery rate? How about if I did that at your waiting room? You know, and he started to get it a little bit. Just a little bit, because he, you know, what are you going to do? He knows more than I do because he's got a degree. But think about it. Rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. There's good news and there's bad news. The good news is rarely have we seen a person fail. If you're suffering from alcoholism, we have a solution that we can all agree on. And rarely have we seen anybody fail who's applied that solution. That's the good news. The bad news is thoroughly following the path. Because there are people who cannot or will not give themselves to this 12-step process. They just won't do it. They do not become convinced that they have to. Usually because they haven't hit a sufficient bottom. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Here it is again. Bill Wilson says important things three times in this book. Keeping fit spiritual condition, maintenance of our spiritual condition. He's going to go on and on and on again. Our responsibility is keeping in fit spiritual condition. If you're a diabetic, it's your responsibility to take insulin and eat a proper diet. If you don't take insulin, you don't eat a proper diet, it's not the doctor's fault that you're getting ill. The same thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're not keeping in fit spiritual condition through the practice of these 12 steps, it's not Alcoholics Anonymous' fault if you drink. There are 10 million alcoholics out there who've come into AA and sat in the waiting room for a while, got drunk, and then think that AA doesn't work for them. When they haven't done AA, AA is the 12 steps. The meetings are just a support area where we get together and try to convince each other that we need to do these steps. That's really what the meetings are for. The sole purpose of an AA group is the teaching and practice of the 12 steps. That's a direct quote from Bill Wilson. That's the sole purpose of an AA group, the teaching and practice of the 12 steps. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. This is another selfless statement. These are thoughts that must go with us constantly. What thoughts? You know, how can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. That's a thought that's supposed to go with us all the time. And, you know, there are some times when that happens with me. That's part of the consciousness that I have, the ceaseless type of prayer that goes on in my head. And sometimes there isn't, because, you know, no one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to this stuff. We all fall short. But it's something that I try to continually remind myself that I need to do. It's God's will. It's not mine. I am not the ruler of the universe. I'm not the director. You know, I'm an actor in this play. I am not the director. We so want to be the director. If everybody would just do what we want them to do, you know, everybody would be happy. That's the typical alcoholic's mindset. You know, we're going to tell our family what to do. We're going to tell the people at work what to do. We're going to tell our friends what to do. It's just innate in us. God's will be done. And then you can let go of so much, you know, false responsibility of being the king of the world. It really is the right way to go. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. What is the proper use of the will? Thy will be done, not mine. You know, how can I help somebody else? That's where we're supposed to be using our willpower. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we carefully followed directions, what does that mean? The first 9 steps. If we carefully followed, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough. They ain't kidding. You know, with the steps. I was 6 months in AA, still thinking going to 12 meetings a week was working a program. Not drinking and going to meetings was working a program. I really thought that. You know, then I started to read this book, and I started to say, well, wait a minute, this is the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. They probably mean some of the stuff that they say in here. I'm not hearing this in my meetings. People are telling me to keep it simple and just don't drink, even if my ass falls off and go to a meeting. And if my ass falls off, drag it to a meeting. You know, that's what I'm getting. I started to pay very, very close attention to this book. Because of my love of recovery and because of my love of Alcoholics Anonymous and my work with other people, without exaggeration, I've gone through this book at least 300 or 400 times. And every single time I go through this book, new things pop out at me. That's the definition of a spiritual classic. The Bible is a spiritual classic, because you can go through the Bible 300 or 400 times and you'll still come across things that are going to blow your mind. That's the definition of this is a spiritual classic, this book. If we've carefully followed directions, we've begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. The realm of the Spirit. The flow of God's Spirit into us. What a promise that is. God's Spirit is going to flow into me. You know, I believe I'm part of God and God's been with me all along. But I haven't felt the flow of God's Spirit because I've been in the way. In the Garden of Eden, he gave Adam and Eve a chance to just experience paradise, okay? Here's the garden, here's all your food, run around naked, have a good time. Just don't eat from that tree, because that tree will turn you self-centered. You'll become a self-centered alcoholic if you eat the apple off of that tree. And what do? They eat the apple. And God comes back. God loves him. God says, all right, you know, you've made your choice. I understand that you want free will. You got free will. You have a sense of self and self-entitlement and selfishness and self-centeredness. God bless you. Take it. But you got to get out of paradise. You got to go east of Eden to the land of Nod. Anybody been at the land of Nod? I was in the land of Nod every night for 10 years. We can get back into paradise. We just have to turn our self-centeredness in at the door. It's all God wanted for us to do anyway. To some extent, we've become God conscious. What does God conscious mean to you? These are things that we're supposed to be asking ourselves. What do they mean to us? Because if we grow spiritually and we grow, if we continue to practice these things, the meanings will change and they'll become more important to us. And they'll become deeper. And the meanings will be broader and more inclusive. To me, today, God consciousness is, I truly believe that God works through me. I do some things. I do some things today that I don't have the capacity to do. I'm not smart enough to do it. I don't have the courage to do it. And I'm out there doing it. I know that there's a power greater than myself working in and through me. I just know it. There's no other explanation. And the God consciousness is, I truly try to think, spiritually today instead of selfishly. I'm about the business of compassion and giving, which is a complete opposite of my alcoholic personality. I think that's part of my God consciousness. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. I love that. Every time you've worked your ass off on some step, the next time they say, well, you've done a little bit of work. Now we really got to get busy. Make no mistake about it. When I first came in, there was a lot of old, cranky old-timers, and you'd hear them forever. And somebody would go, kid, if they told me when I went into Alcoholics Anonymous that you had to do work, and you had to do all these steps, and you got to do all this stuff, I wouldn't have stayed. And I never said this, but what I thought was, who the hell would care if you left, you cranky old bastard? You know what I mean? That's what I was thinking. But I'm telling you, I'll tell you right now, I'm not going to lie to you. I love alcoholics enough to tell the truth. There's a lot of hard work ahead of you if you want to recover from alcoholism. You got to go back and you got to knock on your old boss's door in Milwaukee. I stole $3,000 from the cash register. You got to do that stuff. If you don't, your spirit is going to corrode over the course of time and you ain't going to make it. Think about it like this. Picture a big home group, maybe your home group. How many people raise their hand saying they're new or just coming back? How many people celebrate 90 days? At every celebration I go to, there's four or five people celebrating 90 days. Now, if we all stayed in here, there would be four or five people celebrating 10 years, four or five people celebrating 11 years, four or five people celebrating 13 years, four or five people celebrating 28 years. But you know that doesn't happen. You know that doesn't happen because people leave. I believe we leave because we haven't put enough in to get enough back to have the power to stay. Every single person that's ever gone through the steps with me, every single one who's done a good job at this is still in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started sponsoring in 1990. Every single one of them is still around. They're card-carrying AA members in good standing. Their quality of life is out the roof. And they're all about the business of helping other alcoholics. Everybody that's got through the steps. The people that haven't got through the steps, that aren't practicing 10-11 on a daily basis, aren't sponsoring or finding ways to give of service. All of those have disappeared. Everyone that I ever worked with. I don't know if they're drinking. They're just not in AA anymore. You don't see them anymore. They slide away somehow. Where do they go? I don't know. But you know a million people come through these rooms, and usually our groups don't grow very much. If everyone stayed every single time somebody was new, the meeting would be one more person, and that's just not what happens. All I can tell you is it's been my experience. Am I passionate about this stuff? Do I sound preachy and arrogant? Quite probably. But I'm driven to share this with you because it's had such an impact on my life. These 12 steps have had such an impact on my life. I went from being holed up in a room in my mother's house talking to a whiskey bottle every night to having a life so goddamn large. I just wish there was more hours in the day. I have more friends than I can talk to. I've got more opportunities in my life than I've got more places I can go and things that I can do and get involved. I don't have the time. My biggest problem is not having enough time to do the things that I just really enjoy. And if you're new, if you're coming back, understand that Alcoholics Anonymous is meetings, it's steps, and it's service and sponsorship. If you plug into those things with every bit of effort you can, God will not let you down. Your spirit will not let you down. You will join us in an absolute remarkable journey. The real good news is this. If you're alcoholic, you're suffering from a progressively fatal illness that's not even going to allow you any dignity when it's time to check out. It's a worse prognosis than any kind of cancer out there, alcoholism, because at least cancer allows you the dignity of putting your affairs in order before you check out. Alcoholism, we go out at our absolute worst. We're either pitied or resented, when we check out from alcoholism. The good news is we have a recovery process where rarely have we seen a person fail, and the recovery process offers us everything we've ever wanted in our lives. True serenity, true happiness, true peace of mind. All the gifts that are really valuable. And all I can say, if you're new or you're just coming back, hang in there. Hang in there. This is the right place to be. If you're drinking too much alcohol and you're in your own head and there's bad breaks and misunderstandings and there's idiots and there's, you're in the right place if that's where you're at. That's all I got. Thanks.